Broadcasting from Boston, Massachusetts, you're listening to the Technology Equals Equality podcast.
Welcome back to the Technology Equals Equality podcast. I'm your host, Lori Brooks, and this is episode 48. Thank you guys so much for joining me here today. Our very first episode of 2016. Happy New Year, everyone. I am so excited about all of the amazing things that we have planned for 2016. But before we get there, I just wanted to take a moment to reflect on 2015. First off, in February, we launched the show. And since then, we've generated over 32,000 listens and over 18,000 views of the Technology Equals Equality Community Magazine on Flipboard.com. I'm so grateful for everyone who has taken the time to listen, subscribe, read, and share both the show and the magazine. You guys are making dreams come true minute by minute. The podcast has really taken a life of its own on, and I am super excited for everything that we have planned for this coming year. We will host the very first Technology Equals Equality webinar on scaling your sales practice in the next couple of weeks. It's a completely free presentation, and I'll share the details of it on an upcoming episode and on the blog. You don't want to miss this. Each month, we're also going to have special episodes covering specific topics with special guests and calls with the community. So stay tuned, and again, thank you guys so much for joining us. So I am super pleased to welcome our very first guest of 2016, author and public speaker, Jeff Kinley. Jeff is on a lifelong mission to empower people with the vintage truth. He's the author of 24 books that have sold in the hundreds of thousands. He's a graduate of the University of Arkansas and the Dallas Theological Seminary. Jeff has been a featured guest on Fox and Friends, The Glenn Beck Show, and hundreds of national radio programs. Today, Jeff joins the Technology Equals Equality community to share his journey.
Hello.
Good morning, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing great. Lori, how are you today?
I'm excellent. We would love to know how it is you once saw the future before you began branding yourself and writing and before you became a pastor. And what is it that you saw the future being like way back in high school? What did you think the future would look like?
Well, that's a great question. I think every young person as they're growing up has aspirations to be something or do something special. And, you know, a lot of that sometimes is determined by your culture, the time in which you were raised, your environment, your friends, that type of thing. For me, growing up, I had two older brothers, and they were very influential in my life, just in terms of athletics. And so I played a lot of sports growing up, and we, for whatever reason, we all excelled in sports. And so that, you know, in the back of my mind, I kind of thought, well, you know, maybe I'll be a professional baseball player, a professional basketball player, something like that. And then, of course, you know, I was growing up in the late 60s, mid 70s kind of thing. And rock and roll was huge. And I had an older brother who was a really great guitar player. And I started playing guitar. And so I formed a band, and we started traveling around and started making some money. And so then I thought, well, no, maybe I'll be like a rock star instead. You know, so it's like, okay, pro baseball player or rock star. Those two worlds, you know, don't normally cross the streams, if you will, you know. But something, you know, really changed me along that path, because I guess even though I had sort of career options that were open, I didn't really know who I was as a person. And I think that's one of the things that every person in life kind of hits that intersection where they sort of ask the question, who am I? And what's my purpose here? What am I here for? And I was heavily influenced by another fellow classmate in high school who introduced me to Christ. And that really changed my life, to be honest. And so that kind of made me think, well, gosh, maybe there's something bigger than me, you know, about life itself. And so that kind of made me think about my future more. And I'd never considered going to college, and he was influential in helping me see how a college education was important. And so through going to college, and I ended up majoring in Spanish, of all things. I was always very good in linguistics and, you know, phonetics and learning languages. And so foreign language came very easy for me. And so anyway, I majored in Spanish in college, but I began to experience an increasing desire to be a communicator and to have more of a long-term vision for my life and as it related to ministry. And I had no idea what that would eventually be, as, you know, even people who go to college and then on to grad school sometimes don't know where it's going to, you know, their feet are going to land. But for me, I went to seminary, went to 4-year seminary, and got my master's in theology. And at that point, Lori, I really kind of thought, well, I think I want to give back to my generation. And so I began to be a youth pastor at that time. And so through being a youth pastor, I began to write different, you know, studies and lessons and things like that. And it was during that time I finally recognized that I was gifted creatively in being able to communicate through the written and the spoken word. And so I spent, I don't know, maybe about 20 years doing that. And then in about 1999, I recognized, you know what, I think I'm going to launch off in my own venture here. And I'd been on staff at various churches, from medium-sized churches up to the mega-sized church, and you know, had made great money and had incredible budgets and, you know, great exposure. But I just came to the point where I thought, you know, I want to put a unique fingerprint on the world that nobody else can do. And that's one thing I think every entrepreneur longs to do. They don't want to be like someone else. They really want to have their own mark on humanity, on the world. And so in 1999, I launched my 501c3 nonprofit and kind of launched out into the deep waters by myself. So that's kind of how the future kind of became reality for me.
I love how, going back to the beginning of your story, to start off, you had role models that you had the opportunity to look to, your two older brothers who, you know, were in sports and following their own passions and doing what they enjoyed. And that sparked that interest to find your own passion. And that is one of the most important pieces of this journey, because unless you're really enjoying what it is that you're doing, it's going to be one heck of a journey.
Yeah, absolutely.
Entrepreneur. I mean, you have to really honestly enjoy and have a deep-rooted love and a passion for what it is that you choose to end up doing. So I think the fact that you took the time to really develop your idea around what it is that you wanted to be doing later on in life. I mean, it went from one end of the spectrum to the other. I mean, you could have been the opening act for any baseball game that
right.
had. However, there's various ideas that cross paths throughout life that don't necessarily point in the direction that you might think that path is going. And for every entrepreneur, I find that to be very true, that, you know, their path kind of bends and twists, and you have to be open to that opportunity for it to bend and twist, mainly so you don't drive yourself stir crazy. So.
Absolutely.
But what did you feel were some of the hardest pieces of taking those first steps of venturing out on your own in 99 when you said, you know what, this is it. I really want to put my own spin on things. I want to create my mark. What did you find, you know, those first couple of steps to be as, you know, things that kept you up at night? What was it that you felt was the biggest headache for you back then?
Yeah, and, you know, 1999 is a world away from 2015, 16, and so the whole world of business and of marketing and of entrepreneurship, you know, some principles remain the same, I think, but others you have to kind of flow with the time. And so, you know, back then, I mean, the internet was just really cranking up, and so we were just really getting online, but there weren't sort of, models for people doing what I'm doing in that day. And so it was hard to find initially, really some of those first steps. And so all I knew, Lori, to do was just to tell as many people as I could about what I was doing. I mean, I actually called together a group of people, to meet at a home. And I just said, look, you guys know me. You've known me throughout the years. I did about 2 or 3 meetings like this, actually, one, in Alabama and one in Arkansas, and just called together all these former friends, said, this is what I'm doing. This is why I'm doing it, and this is what I need from you. And I just coveted and asked them for their prayers and for their emotional support Even some of them, I even asked, would they consider financially underwriting some of the startup for my new company, my new ministry. And so I just wanted to tell as many people as I could. And along with that, the second step was just brainstorming on how can I leverage my very limited platform at the time and begin marketing myself in a positive way to the world. And so that began, you know, the process of me really thinking about, you know, how do I take who I am and what I can offer, you know, the world, and how do I put that in a package form to be able to reach people and convince them that what I have is something that they need. So those were the two things that really kind of, you know, launched me out on my journey and got me thinking about how to move this thing forward.
I love it. Started off with really networking, contacting the people that were around you, finding those positive peers, those people who were going to support you from all angles of this sort of adventure. It's an enormous thing if you don't have that sort of support surrounding you. Again, this sort of a journey, becoming an entrepreneur, can drive you stir crazy. It can, can really get under your skin, you know, and so it's important to have those people to surround yourself with that sort of a network. So it's awesome that you were able to reach out to those people and find that support. And then you went on to realistically figuring out how you could take your passion and the skills that you were gaining throughout the time that you were building up the platform to really move forward with it. You know, and throughout those two pieces of, you know, networking and brainstorming, what did you find was the most difficult piece of the networking? I love that you were calling out the meetings and getting people together. How did you strategize around, you know, getting those people together? What were some of the things that you did at that point?
Well, a couple of things that I did was to call on their expertise and their abilities. For example, I had several friends who were entrepreneurs themselves who had started, you know, their own business. And while, you know, obviously some principles would transfer over into, you know, my specific area, others I found, well, this is good information, but it doesn't really apply to me. But I sat down with several men and women and said, look, tell me when you first started your business, you know, what were some of the things that you faced? What are some things that I need to be looking towards for the future? What are some of the pitfalls? What are some of the obstacles, the booby traps that are out there? And because I want to avoid those things. I don't want to spend, 10 years spinning my wheels. I want to, you know, gain traction as much as I can on this thing. So I did. I sat down with several individuals apart from the larger meetings and just said, look, you know, you have expertise in this area over here in marketing, or this area here in networking, or, you know, someone I knew that owned a printing company, and I challenged them, hey, can you help me, you know, with a discounted, you know, rate on printing my first brochures? Can you cut me a deal here, man? And so, that, you know, people were willing to come alongside me in those type of things. But I did find that early on in my journey, Lori, is that, you know, I think every entrepreneur goes through this, is that you have this dream, you have this, you know, vision kind of thing, but then, you know, it doesn't necessarily launch, you know, like the space shuttle into the stratosphere immediately. And so I think there are periods in those early days, and I'm sure, too, along the line, where you just kind of think, gosh, was this a good idea? are people laughing at me behind my back, you know, as I'm doing this crazy journey of mine, this crazy thing? So I think, you know, sometimes I was tempted to not believe in, you know, quote unquote, my product or my experience and my abilities. And, you know, that's where having, you know, my wife by my side, who was 110% committed as I was to our journey together. And she would come alongside me and say, no, there's no better person in America to do this than you. You were born for this. You were made for this. And so just having someone who knows you really well, that is not just filling you with hot air, but really pointing out things. And she would point out things. It's like, you know, hey, I don't think you should do this job over here. I don't think that's really you. You know, stay true to your vision. Stay true to your mission. So that was important, too. So meeting with individuals, having my wife kind of, you know, feed those positive thoughts into my ear. And also, too, for me, because there are other people who are writers and speakers. And so there was the balance between the temptation not to either try to be someone that I'm not, you know, that A-lister over here, or the temptation to compare myself with others who are more successful than me. And I think every entrepreneur has that temptation because they look at, you know, Joe down the road, or here's Sally over here, and they're like, wow, they're just booming. How come I'm not experiencing that same degree of success? And you know, they're not you. And so I had to really realize that God had given me a unique gift that only I could do, and I needed to stay true to that and not compare myself. But as I stayed true to that, then pretty soon I got a little bit of success. I took that success, you know, like a little leaven, and made another loaf of bread with it, you know, and was able to help breed other success through it. So it did take some time, but I did have some doubts in the early days.
I totally understand 100% that internal thought process that can gnaw away at you, telling you all sorts of silly things as you try to begin, and to, again, go back to that support and surrounding yourself with those people who can really provide you with the guidance and the mentorship and the ability to stay true to that vision despite those pivots and turns that the journey can take. Really important.
Absolutely.
So, Jeff, you have a new book and a movie, and I would love for you to tell us about the two, Wake the Bride. I thought the title was extremely intriguing. It totally does not at all allude to the actual context of the book.
Well, in 2014, I released through Harvest House Publishers a book called As It Was in the Days of Noah, and it came out actually with in concert with the Noah movie with Russell Crowe, not in connection to it, but in the same chronological release date. And because, you know, we always know that when Hollywood does a movie about the Bible, is that, you know, some things may be spot on, other times they kind of swing and miss and don't necessarily tell the story as people who are used to reading it in the Bible. And so so we wanted to provide a sort of an alternative, more of a biblically true story as to what Noah's story was all about, and specifically what Jesus Christ said about the last days of planet Earth and how they will relate to the days of Noah. And so we released that book in April of 2014, and it was immediately well received. I found myself, you know, on Fox and Friends, on the Glenn Beck Show, and on hundreds of radio and TV shows. The book went to number one in prophecy on Amazon. It reached the number 94 spot out of 8 million books on Amazon. And so it's continued to have success. I've been very, very blessed with that. But my follow-up book to that was the Wake the Bride book. And Wake the Bride really came about because I find that a lot of people really struggle when it comes to biblical prophecy, and specifically the book Revelation, because, you know, people look at Revelation, they think it's a lot of science fiction and it seems foggy and far off because it does talk about some of the things in the future. So I decided to really tackle that for the average person and sort of put that in a language that people could really understand. And so I make the point in the book that the book is both personal and prophetic, but more than just saying, you know, this is what's going to happen and these are the dates it's going to happen. I'm not really into that, but it's more so the condition of the bride, which Jesus calls the church, the bride of Christ. And so really talk about how does a bride prepare herself for to meet her groom. And having been a minister over 30 years, I've probably done, I don't know, 80 weddings. And I always tell the guy, I said, look, if you show up with a ring and a pulse, I think I can get you through this ceremony, you know. But typically the woman, she spends months and months and months getting ready. And that's really the point of the book, is to help believers, help Christians understand how they can get ready for that. So the book released in October, and it's doing well. And I'm in the middle of a bunch of radio and TV that I'm doing right now for the book. But you mentioned the movie. The movie is that I wrote a book back in 2001 called Through the Eyes of a Champion, the Brandon Burlsworth story. And Brandon's story, just in a quick nutshell, is that he's considered perhaps the greatest walk-on in the history of college football. And he was this huge 6'3", 311-pound offensive lineman who didn't get a scholarship to any school. And yet he had an incredible amount of determination and drive and passion. And Brandon was determined to make the team, and to be an All-American, All-SEC, which he was. And then he was drafted by the Indianapolis Colts in the third round. But 3 weeks after being drafted, he was tragically killed in a car accident. And so his story, when you read his story, you say to yourself, wow, I didn't think that people like this still existed. I mean, he was very much a yes, sir, yes, ma'am kind of guy, just really a throwback kind of figure. So his story is so incredibly inspirational. So I wrote the book in 2001. And sold the movie rights in 2005, and the movie's really been 10 years in the making, and I'm a small part of the movie. I am, sort of a part of the production team, just invested a little bit in that. But it's a great movie. You can go to IMDb and type in Greater, and you can see kind of who's in the movie and some of the stars and actors and actresses you'll definitely recognize. But it's coming to theaters on January 22nd, and again, it's called Greater, and I'm very excited that this story is finally being brought to the big screen.
Awesome. Well, Jeff, congrats on both the book and the movie. I'm very excited to check that out myself. If you had a time machine right now and could go back and you could tell yourself one thing, what would that one thing be?
Well, I think that one thing would be to say it's worth it. Because quite frankly, you know, when I dive into to write a book, I mean, depending on the contract that I'm in, it can be anywhere from 4 to 6 months, and sometimes less than that. And I lock myself in my study, and I'll hang a curtain over the French doors that go into my study and just say, ring the bell if you want to know something, you know. But, you know, it's an arduous process being a writer to take a manuscript, you know, some 60 to 80,000 words and to labor and obsess over every word, to craft every sentence in a way that the reader is just going to bite into a juicy piece of steak and to create scenes and that type of thing. So it does take a toll on the nervous system to crank out a book. And I think sometimes when I begin that project, like beginning another book here in a week or so, and, you know, it's sort of like you look at this huge mountain in front of you and just go, wow, I hope I'm hydrated for this thing, you know. So I would say, you know, to say it's worth it, because, you know, to be honest, and a part of my story I didn't share earlier, Lori, was the fact that in high school, I was a high school flunky. I flunked English in high school by the age of 16. I'd never read or written anything deeper than a comic book. And so my high school English teacher told me in front of the whole class I would never amount to anything in life. And so just really kind of seeing from where I've come and now what I've been able to do and what God has done, it's really just amazing. So yeah, just, you know, sometimes you got to give yourself that pep talk and say, look, this is going to be worth it. You might have a few scars at the end, but that's okay, because you'll be glad. The view from up here on top of the mountain is pretty good.
I think that's absolutely priceless. That was outstanding, Jeff.
Thank you.
It's worth it.
Thank you so much.
You took the time machine and you went back and you made sure your mindset was there. And that's really the key to, being successful on the journey.
Yeah.
So, you know, the show is really designed to help entrepreneurs come up with ideas for innovative companies in an industry that they may not have been thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
So we would absolutely love to help you.
And thank you.
You know, if you had a magic wand and could change anything at all in your business, would it be and why?
Well, I think for me, you know, that you're always wanting to push yourself forward. You know, you want to avoid stagnation and, you know, getting stuck and stale, or, you know, not keeping up with where, you know, the highway is moving and that kind of thing. And so for me, because I am, you know, a one-man operation, I mean, I do farm out, obviously, you know, several things, but in terms of just content creation, in terms of product marketing, in terms of branding and that type of thing, and I'm doing a lot of that myself. So I guess if there would be one thing that I could change, if I could wave a magic wand, I would clone myself and also bring someone in who was smarter than me, just in areas of marketing, had more time. I am in the process of hiring a part-time personal assistant to help me with some duties. But I guess that is, you know, I always tell people, it's kind of like this, and people who've been in the sports will understand this. It's like, you know, you have your, if you're right-handed and you can throw a football or a baseball, You feel really confident about that. And then someone all of a sudden puts the baseball or the football in your left hand and you try to throw there. And I always tell people, I said, me doing my marketing for my business is kind of like throwing left-handed. I can do it, but it doesn't look that pretty, you know, and I'm, you know, people may laugh at me when I do it, but I can still do it, but it just doesn't have the zip and the distance and the accuracy that my right hand has. So I think all of us are, we find, you know, sort of our core skill set, and we're thinking, well, gosh, that's what I really, when I, you set me loose to do A, then I can, man, I can build you a forest, you know, with this thing. But then when I have to do C or D in my skill set, then, you know, it's not quite as proficient as I am with those core things that I'm really, really good at. It's really a part of my natural DNA. So that'd be the one thing that I would change.
Awesome. I love it. I have got to get the techie community working on this cloning machine.
Yes.
I keep saying it myself. I need a clone.
Yep. So, absolutely.
But somebody's got to come up with, this is a lucrative. I mean, there's multiple customers out here. We're just waiting.
Yep, that's right.
So definitely, Jeff, you've been absolutely wonderful. So I truly appreciate you taking the time to share today. Please share the best way for our listeners to find you.
Absolutely. Just jeffkinley.com, JeffKinley.com. And there you have links to some of my other books and some video interviews and that type of thing that you can watch there. And so I wish the very, very best for your listeners. And I would just say, persevere through the hard times. Sometimes it's feast, sometimes it's famine. But either way, stay true to the vision. And in the end, you'll have success.
Outstanding, Jeff. Thank you, thank you.
Thank you so much, Lori.
Like Jeff said, it's worth it. So what are you waiting for? Go get started. And then check out Jeff Kinley at jeffkinley.com. Or you can always reach him through our show notes page at technologyequality.com/Jeff Kinley. Jeff, thank you once again for joining us this week. I truly appreciate you taking the time to share. Techie community, thank you guys for checking out the show once again. Happy, happy new year. I wish you guys the absolute best in 2016. And until our next episode, when we continue to hear the journey, find the pain and create solutions, enjoy the week.